Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're continuing our reading from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is chapter 12, Birth of Emperor Pariksit. And today's text is 12. Tataha Sarva Gunodarke Sanukula Grahodaye Jagye Pangsa Dharaha Pandur Buyaha Pandur Ivochasa Tatak sarva guno darke Sanu kula graho haddaye Yagye vangsha dharak pandur Bhuyak pandur ivaujasa Tatak sarva guno darke Sanu kula graho daye Yagye vangsha dharak pandur Puyak pandur ivaujasa Tatak sarva guno darke Sanukula grahodaye Yagye vangsha dharak pandur Puyak pandur ivaujasa Vaishnavis Tatak sarva guno darke Sanukula grahodaye Yagye vangsha darak pandur Puyak pandur ivaujasa Tatak sarva guno darke Sanukula grahodaye Yagye vangsha darak pandur Puyak pandur ivaujasa. So, word meaning stataha, thereupon, sarva, all, guna, good signs, udarke, having gradually evolved, sa anukula, all favorable, grahodaye, constellation of stellar influence, Yagni took birth. Vangshadharaha. Heir apparent. Pandoho of Pandu. Bhuyaha. Being. Panduhu. Eva. Exactly like Pandu. Ojasa. By prowess. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. Please repeat. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. So Srila Prabhupada's purport for this verse. Astronomical calculations of stellar influences upon a living being are not suppositions but are factual, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Every living being is controlled by the laws of nature at every minute, just as a citizen is controlled by the influence of the state. The state laws are grossly observed, but the laws of material nature, being subtle to our gross understanding, cannot be experienced grossly. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 9, every action of life produces another reaction which is binding upon us, and only those who are acting on behalf of Yajna, Vishnu, are not bound by reactions. Our actions are judged by the higher authorities, the agents of the Lord, and thus we are awarded bodies according to our activities. The law of nature is so subtle that every part of our body is influenced by the respective stars, and a living being obtains his working body to fulfill his terms of imprisonment by the manipulation of such astronomical influence. A man's destiny is therefore ascertained by the birth time constellation of stars, and a factual horoscope is made by a learned astrologer. It is a great science, and misuse of a science does not make it useless. Maharaj Parikshit, or even the personality of Godhead, appear in certain constellations of good stars. And thus, the influence is exerted upon the body, thus born, at an auspicious moment. The most auspicious constellation of stars takes place during the appearance of the Lord in this material world, and it is specifically called Jayanti, a word not to be abused for any other purposes. Very important, because sometimes we say Gita Jayanti even, but that's technically not correct. Jayanti is only used for Krishna's appearance, nothing else. So I'll read that again. The most auspicious constellation of stars takes place during the appearance of the Lord in this material world, and it is specifically called Jayanti, a word not to be abused for any other purposes. Maharaj Parikshit was not only a great Kshatriya emperor, but also a great devotee of the Lord. Thus, he cannot take his birth at any inauspicious moment. As a proper place and time is selected to receive a respectable personage, so also to receive such a personality as Maharaj Parikshit, who was especially cared for by the Supreme Lord, a suitable moment is chosen when all good stars assemble together to exert their influence upon the king. Thus he took his birth just to be known as the great hero of Srimad Bhagavatam. This suitable arrangement of astral influences is never a creation of man's will, but is the arrangement of the superior management of the agency of the Supreme Lord. Of course, the arrangement is made according to the good or bad deeds of the living being. Herein lies the importance of pious acts performed by the living being. Only by pious acts can one be allowed to get good wealth, good education, and beautiful features. The sanskaras of the school of Sanatana Dharma, man's eternal engagement, are highly suitable for creating an atmosphere for taking advantage of good stellar influences, and therefore Garbhadhan Sanskara, or the first seedling purificatory process prescribed for the higher castes, is the beginning of all pious acts to receive a good, pious, and intelligent class of men in human society. There will be peace and prosperity in the world due to good and sane population only. There is hell and disturbance only because of the unwanted, insane populace addicted to sex indulgence. One of those sentences of prophet writes that should be underlined, highlighted, broadcast. There will be peace and prosperity in the world due to good and sane population only. There is hell and disturbance only because of the unwanted, insane populace addicted to sex indulgence. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumati Bhakta Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachideshtarane Om Agyana Tamirandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruvay Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnang Shapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyahang Shri Guru Shri Tapada Kamalam Shri Guru and Vaishnavaksha Shri Rupam Sagajata Sahagana Raghunatham Vatam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadutam Purjana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pahadan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vatangsha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesh Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha Kopatarubhya Shah Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Shri Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Tataha Papa translates in this verse as thereupon, sometimes translated as thereafter, meaning this is now in sequence. So what happened previously, we heard Parikshit was actually killed in the womb, but because the body was destroyed. The soul can never be destroyed, we know that. The Supreme Soul lives eternally, is eternally existing, and the individual souls, being part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, are also eternally existing. There's no question of death. Na jayate na mriyate va kadachit. There is no birth or death for the soul, just as there is no birth or death for Krishna. But Krishna appears in this world, and when he does, there's a particular arrangement of the constellations, and that's called Jayanti. When we appear, it's because of our reactions to previous pious or impious deeds. Eka prasuyate jantur eka esha praliyate. Ekon bhunte sukritam eka esha chaduskritam. This verse is there in the 10th canto. That every living being is born alone and dies alone, and alone we have to enjoy or suffer the reactions to our previous activities, good or bad activities. So this is our situation. Because we have turned away from Krishna, we've come into this world, we're trying to enjoy. But we're impelled by the modes of nature to act. And yes, Krishna does know everything. Bhrigupati asked this question the other day and it was kind of discussed, but doesn't he know? Yeah, he knows and he doesn't know by his arrangement, by his will. He knows everything. Otherwise, there's no meaning to the word absolute truth. Absolute truth is abhigya. It's the first verse of the Bhagavatam. Abhigya Surat. Because he's abhigya, he knows everything, then he's independent. Because we don't know everything, we're not independent. Just like the other day, one of the insane members of today's population played a prank, claimed to be here in the temple, armed and holding hostages. And the police have to take it seriously because there are such insane people out there who do these kind of things. And sometimes it's not a prank. Sometimes it's actually a fact. They kill people. They go into a mosque in Pittsburgh and they kill however many people they kill, one guy. Or a church in the south, or they go to religious organizations. They target quite frequently. We've been targeted in the past, New Vrindavan. They attacked. Someone was just telling me recently that after some research, devotees realized that the police were complicit in that attack. They knew that these KKK guys were going to attack New Vrindavan and they didn't do anything. So sometimes the police act and sometimes they don't act. This is not something new. Tomorrow we are observing the disappearance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was such a powerful preacher that even so-called religious people of other inclinations were afraid of him. And some of them actually paid some dacoits to kill him. And the police approached him and told him, and said, you know, sometimes we accept bribes and we look the other way, but in your case we can't do it. So we're warning you, please be careful. So this is going on since time immemorial. Because There are two classes of men in or beings in the universe always. Bhavabhuta, Sargalokesmin, Deva, Asura, Evacha. There are always the Devas and the Asuras. It's always there, always going on. From the dawn of time, there were Asuras chasing Lord Brahma. You know, his own creation, you could say. Turned on him. So we can't be surprised. To be surprised when there is danger is foolish, because you're living in a dangerous place. It's like spending the night in the jungle and being surprised if you get attacked by some animal. And in the jungle, you can be attacked by anything, from the smallest, some fire ants, who can kill you. If enough of them get on your body, you will die, because their bites are so ferocious and powerful. When I moved to Alachua in 92, the Back to God magazine I was serving at the time, Jayadvaita Maharaj decided we should get out of expensive San Diego and move to inexpensive Alachua. So we did. So the BTG, at that time it was myself, Yamaraj Prabhu, Jayadvaita Maharaj, and Dravida living in the BTG house in San Diego. And so we got a trailer on the Alachua farm there, and three of us moved. Dravida was stayed back in San Diego. Bajram Narayan Maharaj would not allow, he was not Maharaj yet at the time, he was Pampa president, he would not allow Dravida to leave. It was too important part of the community because so many other devotees left. The entire BTG staff, the BI staff, Sadaputa, etc. And even the ISKCON World Review, Sarva and his wife, Kunti, they also moved. So a huge chunk of San Diego moved to Alachua. So we moved into this brand new trailer that was put there on the Alachua farm. Smelled like formaldehyde. Yeah, so it was difficult to get used to sleeping there because San Diego air is pretty clean, even cleaner than Los Angeles because it's right on the ocean and, you know, you get a good breeze every day. So it was a big adjustment living in that trailer. But on top of the smell, the place was carpeted. The entire trailer was carpeted, which I hate carpet. I hate living on carpet, but we found out very soon, because we would sit to have our meals in the main room on the carpet, that there were fire ants there. These tiny little ants, you could barely see them. But the bite was so painful. Just one bite from one ant. So imagine if you get covered, which is what happens in the jungle sometimes. These ants come out and they jump on bigger creatures, lizards, snakes, birds, and they just cover them and bite them to death. So you can't be surprised if you're living in the jungle, either you're going to get attacked, either by small creatures or medium-sized creatures or huge creatures. Anything is, there's danger at every step, literally. And so in this so-called civilized society that we're living in, because the populace is insane. They're insane. They've been driven mad by the modes of material nature and by their illicit desires. Madness is one of the six enemies of the living entity in material life. Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. These are the six enemies of the living entity in material life. So we can't be surprised when people go mad, and we see them every day going back and forth here on Venice Boulevard. I have said it before, but I'm sitting in my office and I look out the window and I see them coming along and I'm praying to Krishna, please let them just go west. Keep going west. Don't turn north onto Watsik Avenue. And it's like something goes off in their mind. Every single one of them, they stop and they look and they look and they look over to the rest. They look. But thank God, most of them keep going west. Because if they come in here, they just create disturbance. This is what insane people do. They create disturbances. So when a large percentage of the population is insane, there's nothing but disturbance at every step. And those who are little sane or trying to become sane, we are disturbed by them. If you can live with such people and not be disturbed, then you're really nuts. Then you're really crazy, because the crazy people drive each other even more crazy. You see that all the time. They fight, they kill each other because they drive each other even more insane. So this Krishna consciousness movement is meant to turn hippies into happies, as Prabhupada said, insane people into sane people. And what is a sane person? A sane person is a person who understands that, first of all of this didn't come out of nothing. That's insanity right there. I don't care how many degrees you have. If you think, accept in your heart and your mind that all of this complexity that we see came out of nothing, you're nuts. It's impossible. You look at their paradigm, that there was an explosion. And after that, things were happening randomly. All these creatures were evolving randomly. But you look at all the order that has come out of such so-called randomness. Everywhere we look, there are cycles. Seasonal cycles. Life cycles, the cycles of the planets, just like it's mentioned in today's verse about the planets. They're moving in cycles, every one of them. And a particular arrangement is made, or the great person like Parikshit Maharaj takes birth when there's a particular arrangement of those cycles of planets, the grahas. It's not an accident. It's impossible. When you look at the complexity of this tiny little planet, which is like a speck of dust, one speck of dust in this room, compared to the vast universe, this earth planet is like one speck of dust inside this room. And on that one little speck of cosmic dust, there's so much complexity. There's so much complexity. I've said many times, but they admit themselves. When I was young, they taught us there was no life at the bottom of the ocean. It's too deep, too dark, the pressure is too great, there's no sunlight, there's no life down there. But now, later on they change, and they say that. They say that openly. We used to think that there was no life at the bottom of the deepest ocean trenches because it's too hostile an environment. But now we know, lo and behold, because we've sent our submersibles and we put light on it, now we see that there's a lot of life down there. There are these crabs that live right next to those most violent cracks in the bottom of the ocean where the sulfuric acid is coming out and water is practically at boiling temperature. There are these crabs. And don't forget, down there is completely dark. We only see them because we bring light down there. These crabs are clinging to this right next to these vents. And how do they survive? Because anything that falls down, as soon as it comes in contact with that hot layer, it dies and it just filters down and that's what they eat. In complete darkness. They're clinging to these vents. So they say, we used to think there was nothing there, but now we know that there is life there. Life evolves so nicely to take advantage of this crack in the ocean and all this food that comes down. So Sariputta Prabhu, when he was alive, not only was he a brilliant devotee scientist, he was a great wit also. So he said once, they say we used to think, but now we know. But it's just the opposite. They used to know, and now they think. Because whatever they think, they present as knowledge. And they don't allow any other paradigm to exist. Whatever they think. When they think that there's no life, that's what they put in the books and that's what they teach you. And if you dare to say something different, you fail. You fail. F. Because you don't repeat what we told you. But now that they see that they were wrong, oh yes, we were wrong. But our knowledge is evolving. So this is called the Aroha path of knowledge, the ascending path, where you postulate something and even though you're completely wrong, you teach it as science. And then when you finally find out that you're wrong, then you change your science books. And now this is the new science. Yes, yes, we keep building up our knowledge. But devotees don't accept that. We accept the Avaroha Panta, the descending path of knowledge. Everything is already known. Krishna knows everything. Everything. Remember that. That's why he's the absolute truth. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Lord Brahma says. If Krishna didn't know everything, he would have said Ishvara Parama Vishnu. You see? Because he knows. He knew the super soul existed. Different Vishnu forms exist. Lord Brahma knew that, knows that. So he would have said, Ishvara Parama Vishnu. But he particularly points out Krishna. Krishna is the origin. That's why Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami. That's why he worships Govinda Krishna. Not Lord Vishnu, not Mahavishnu, not some other form of Vishnu. He worships Krishna. Because Krishna is the origin of all the Vishnu forms, and he knows everything. So when we see that it appears Krishna does not know something, it's Leela. He knows and he doesn't know. He knows, but for pastime, he's pretending that he doesn't know. Just like he pretends to be the son of Mother Yashoda, and he plays the part perfectly. Give him an Oscar every single moment. He plays the part perfectly. So Mother Yashoda is convinced, this is my son. He is dependent on me, he needs me. But even in the Vrindavan mood, he shows. Look inside my mouth, you want to see? What do you see in there? Everything is in there. Including you. She saw herself in Krishna's mouth. She was totally bewildered. Alright, don't eat dirt again. Shut your mouth. I don't want to know that you're the source of everything. I just want to continue seeing you as my son. So this is Krishna. And this Krishna consciousness movement is meant to bring us to this complete, or as far as possible, complete understanding of Krishna. That all this complexity that we see in the world. So this is the beginning of sanity. To understand that all this complexity, all these cycles that we see, including our own life cycle, birth, like Parikshit is taking birth now, and we've already heard about how he's going to die. Birth and death. Cycle of birth and death. So, sanity means I'm in this cycle of birth and death. So let me figure out, is there a way to get out of this cycle of birth and death? And this is what Krishna consciousness does for us. So a sane person, understanding that death is inevitable, will take to this path of Krishna consciousness so that we don't have to take birth again and again and again and again and again. Because this is what happens to us. Every birth, we come out of the womb, and instead of doing like Parikshit, the examiner, he was always looking for Krishna. Always looking for Krishna. Is this person Krishna? Is that person Krishna? He's looking for Krishna because he saw Krishna. And once you've seen Krishna, clearly there is nothing else, no one else that can substitute. Nobody else. Not even a Vishnu form like the gopis showed when Krishna disappeared from the Ras dance and they were looking for him. Krishna assumed the four-handed form of Narayan. And so the gopis approached respectfully. My dear Lord, did you see which way Krishna went? Now, if we were to see Lord Narayan, forget it, even if we saw Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, we would be so fascinated. But here they see Lord Narayan, and they're sufficiently respectful, but they're looking for Krishna. So in this mood, Parikshit was looking for Krishna, Krishna only Krishna. Because our natural tendency in this material world is to want to put ourselves in the center. We're imitating Krishna. So we want to, and everybody's always reinforcing, yes, get to know yourself better. Love yourself. You. When you get to love you, then you can. No, when you get to love Krishna, then you will understand yourself and everyone else. If you keep putting you first, me first, or my extended me, my family, my community, my race, my ethnic group, my. Then you find nothing but conflict. Nothing but conflict. You don't see any room for you and your interests to exist along with other people and their interests. And they speculate like anything. And therefore we have this mad, confused society. So it's a grave responsibility following Srila Prabhupada's footsteps, assisting Srila Prabhupada in trying to make others sane. But first of all, we have to become sane. So the first duty of the disciple is to present himself or herself in front of the guru as being foolish, agya. If you think you're so smart, continue to think that yourself of being smart, and then you're not going to make much progress. If you don't realize that due to foolishness have remained in this material world for so long, it's my duty to submit myself to somebody who can get me out of here. I cannot get myself out of here. But it's not so easy. Even to come to that obvious point of full surrender, it's not so easy. Because Maya is always whispering. Yeah. But what about you? Take care of yourself first. You first. You. And again, you're so intelligent. You're a very intelligent person. You don't have to listen to everything then. Just figure it out yourself. You don't have to be led by the nose like a bull with a ring to its nose. No, just figure it out. And this is Western education. Teach me the basics and then I'll figure it out so I can be lauded as a very, very big, big thinker. But we see, the big, big thinker lives long enough to can't even remember his own name or her own name. Maya is so strong. Big, big thinkers, they can come up with so big, big formulas that it takes an hour to write it on the blackboard. And then in a few more years, he can't even pick up the chalk anymore. You see? Embarrassing situation we're in. But again, we just always love to hear Maya whispering in our ear, yeah, you're great, you're better, you're... Don't... These other guys, they're so foolish and they're just like sheep trying to follow some leader. Well, you should be a leader. Why should you be a follower? And we drink that Kool-Aid every day. We drink it willingly. Until another death comes around and we realize, oh, I failed. So before death comes, before another death comes, we have to allow ourselves to be brought back to sanity. And this is what Srila Prabhupada was surprised when he came. How insane these people are in New York. Totally nuts. He even stayed with one insane boy on the Bowery. And the boy finally flipped out and Prabhupada had to literally run out of the apartment. That's how insane we get. Krishna gives you the arrangement, imagine, of living with the sanest, most powerful preacher on the planet. You have an opportunity to learn everything from such a person. Everything. From cooking to cleaning to personal hygiene. Everything Prabhupada could teach and taught. You have that opportunity, living personally with such a person. And what do? You attack him. This is insane. But to even be indifferent to such a person is insane. Because we're stuck in this quagmire of birth and death. And Prabhupada can lead us out. All we have to do is give submissive oral reception. That's all. Submissive oral reception. Kick out all your preconceived notions of being great and a leader and knowledgeable and smart, and kick it all out and just give submissive oral reception to Srila Prabhupada, and we will be saved. We'll be saved. And there is no loss. Even if we don't make it out, there is no loss. You get the chance to start over. That verse that we've been given. Yes. There is no loss. If you take to this path and you don't finish, you'll be given a chance to pick up and continue. But why not try hard to finish? Why not try hard to finish? Understanding what the goal is. The goal is to reawaken our love for Krishna, which is actually there already. It's in the heart. We don't have to go looking for it downtown LA, or we don't have to go to Bora Bora, or, oh, I've never been to Mount Everest, I have to go see Mount Everest, otherwise my life is... No. No. Wherever we are, New Dwarka, or New Govardhan, or wherever we live, just follow the program that Prabhupada gave. Give submissive oral reception to whatever Prabhupada has to say. And we will make progress gradually, gradually. And this is the real evolution. The evolution of consciousness back to sanity. That's the real evolution. Not bodies changing into bodies. That does not happen. Kick it out. Because we're still so polluted by the so-called scientific education that we've had. It doesn't happen. Simple single-cell animals, creatures remain that way. We see the ocean is full of this zooplankton, they call it. Tiny, tiny, tiny living entities. And they remain like that for millions and billions of years. And that's what the bigger creatures eat. The biggest creatures in the ocean, like the blue whale, grows to 100 feet long. What do they eat? The smallest plankton. Stuff like that. So this is Krishna's arrangement. There's such interdependency in this world that all we can do is mess it up. Better just leave it alone. Because whenever we do, we mess it up. So many studies have been done, just like again in the ocean. There are so many interdependencies in the coral system. When you kill the apex predators, like the sharks and stuff, and the bigger sailfish and stuff like that, they have a role to play. Not only they feed themselves by attacking the small fish, but they drive those small fish to the surface of the ocean. And then the birds that depend on that, they come and eat. When they kill all these apex predators, then the small fish don't come to the surface anymore, and the birds can't eat. Some birds can dive in the water and catch the fish, but most of them, they depend on these predators to push the fish to the top, and then they just come in and pick them up. So everything we do is simply messes up Krishna's perfect arrangement. And it's not an accident. It didn't evolve that way. You cannot have such perfect cycles and interdependencies out of some random... It doesn't work. It was obviously designed as a system. And if you leave the system alone, it continues to function nicely. But if we don't leave it alone, we simply pollute it We either directly kill them or we kill them indirectly by pollution, runoff from the farms and plastic in the ocean. And all this stuff is just man's interference. So we should stop interfering with nature, learn to be sane again, live in harmony with nature, and qualify ourselves to go back to Godhead just by simply taking knowledge from the most knowledgeable Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any questions, comments? I think Ananda Kirtan actually went and got the mic. He was so eager. Yes. But speak into the mic directly, otherwise we don't hear you.
So in the purport, the last sentence, Prabhupada, where he says, there will be peace and prosperity in the world due to good and sane population only. There is hell and disturbance only because of the unwanted insane populace addicted to sex indulgence. I was wondering if you can explain maybe the faults of like this conception of like women's liberation and how that actually exposes the women to become exploited and cause unwanted population, and what the ideal society would look like if we actually were following the Vedic tradition.
That's a whole course right there. You could speak for months on that. But again, it's one of the perfect arrangements of Krishna. The perfect arrangement is Varnashram Dharma. This is how human beings are meant to live, civilized people. And part of that civilized life is women have to be shy. It was mentioned earlier when Krishna entered Dwarka, how the queens were shy. They went up to the roofs. So this shyness is actually essential for civilized living. When women are allowed to just do whatever they want, when anyone is allowed to do whatever they want, havoc and, you know, it's created. We see. People speculate about what life is all about, how to live, what to do, what not to do, and they just create havoc. But if we take information from the Shastra, and the living Shastra, like Srila Prabhupada, then we understand that this institution of Varna and Ashram is the perfect way for human beings to live, civilized human beings. And part of that Varna Ashram Dharma is, as far as possible, separation of the sexes for the ideal of attaining Krishna consciousness. Sometimes when that topic is brought up in colleges, as you know, I speak in schools and universities, and people ask about that. So I asked them, why is it that even till today, many parts of Western society, you have girls' schools and boys' schools, girls' colleges? Why? Why did that system come into being of separating men and women for education especially? And they all get it. Because when we mix together, education is not the topmost thing in our minds. Therefore, if you want an educated populace, even in mundane education, they separate the sexes, girls' schools, boys' schools. When I was young, I'm 66 now, when I was young, at least in my country where I was born in Jamaica, even on the high school level it was separated. You had girls' high schools, boys' high schools. Because everybody knows, you mix the sexes and the result is not necessarily good. Generally, it's not good. So if you want to progress, even materially, you separate the sexes. They learn better. They progress better when they're separated. You mix them together and you get all kinds of things happening. What to speak of on the spiritual platform? On the spiritual platform, if you want to make progress spiritually, you have to come to the point of understanding I'm not this body. I'm spirit soul, no matter what kind of body I have. So if you keep the sexes mixed, then they stay on the bodily platform. They just look at each other's bodies, potential sex partners, bodies. That's all on the bodily platform of life. If you want to progress spiritually, you have to know I'm not this body. So the best way to do that is to, as far as possible, separate the sexes. And then young man taught from the very beginning to see every woman as mother. And therefore, as long as he doesn't have a wife, he'll continue with that vision. Every woman is my mother, regardless of her age, whether she's younger, older, no matter what she looks like. It's not that the ones that don't look so good I call Mataji, but the really beautiful ones, it's like, oh. No, everybody, Mataji. Mataji. So this is real education, real training. And it's a long story, like I said, we can speak for hours on this subject, but the basic principle is, if you want to make progress as civilized human beings, separation of the sexes is essential. But Prabhupada even said, separate but equal societies. It's not that the men are trained that they're somehow are more, they're superior to women. No, they're not. But for spiritual progress, and even again for material education, it's better to keep the sexes separated. Otherwise, the whole scenario just deteriorates on the bodily platform. Everybody seeing each other, the body, potential sex partner, and it just, you know, all good intentions go out the window. Yes. Gauranga Prem Prabhu.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class, Prabhu. So in the purport, Srila Prabhu, he was mentioning that good stars or auspicious stars, they can influence the life of the living beings. So I'm just wondering how the stars can influence the life of the, you know, living beings. Can you explain it a bit further?
Well, everything is personal. Everything is personal. These stars are not just some impersonal manifestation. There's personality behind it. Ultimately, there's a supreme person. And as Prabhupada said, and also in the purport, that it also comes down to what you deserve. Based on your past pious or impious activities, you will take birth under a particular set of stellar influences so that your life will progress in a certain way. So the great souls, like Srila Prabhupada, Parikshit Maharaj, they take birth at auspicious times. But those who are destined to be punished mostly in this world, they take birth in inauspicious times and inauspicious places. And so it's a very deep science, as Prabhupada said. And that science is hardly known anymore. But he said, just because, well, he says, misuse of a science does not make it, you know, not desirable. So there are still some people who are properly trained in this science of astrology, and therefore they can write a good birth chart. Just like recently we celebrated the debutante party of this couple, what's the name? I forget now their names. Radha Mohan, I think, is the husband, and the wife is Chamika Rishi's daughter. Anyway, I forget her name. But they brought their daughter and they had a party. And so the wife was telling me that they had a ISKCON astrologer do the chart. And the astrologer told them that this girl, now she's a girl, but in her previous life, she was an ISKCON. She was an ISKCON devotee. Not just a devotee of Krishna, but an ISKCON. She was an ISKCON, died, and now came back again, took birth from devotees in ISKCON, because the mother is an initiated devotee. Her father is a proper disciple. Her mother is a proper disciple. So you can see the connection. This person in a previous life was an ISKCON devotee, didn't fulfill the course, died, and now took birth again in ISKCON. So this is real astrology. But we should try to finish up the business. Why take birth again? Yes, it's nice to take birth from ISKCON devotees who are following Prabhupada and you have a good chance. But we see also, because we have individual will, even though you take birth in a good family, a devotee family, you can still go off. You have your individual will. And especially in Kali Yuga, there's so much negative influence, it's easy for children to spin off. Again, if we don't have Gurukulas and they have to go to outside schools, immediately they start wondering, why can't I be like Johnny and Jane? Why I have to be different? And I can't eat this and I can't eat that. And you know, from the very beginning of life, they start getting dragged down. So it's better to get out of here and not have to deal with that again. At the end of this life, go back to Godhead. Because even a high birth in a good family, you could be messed up. All right, one more and then we have
Thank you very much.
Yes, Bhrigupati Prabhu.
Thank you for a brilliant class. Prabhu, my question on Saturday wasn't, does Krishna know everything? But it was, is Krishna paying attention to everything he knows? Like, just like for argument's sake, let's say you know 1,000 verses. But you're not sitting there thinking of your 1,000 verses right at this moment. I mean, you know, you're listening to my question. So I think the way Judhakarma answered it was that his super soul, he does. He's conscious of everything that he knows. That he's like completely on top of everything at every second. But as Krishna, enjoying with Radharani and Goloka Vrindavan, not necessarily. Of course, I suppose he could get chipped off at any second if there's something he needed to pay attention to. Perhaps that's an open implication.
The answer when you deal with Krishna is always yes and no. Yes, he is, and no, he isn't. That's why it's a chintya, inconceivable. Because we want to compartmentalize everything. Either you know or you don't know. Either you're conscious or you're not conscious. Krishna is both simultaneously, conscious and not conscious. And if we look at the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumar finally gets back to Goloka, Krishna is waiting for me. He's embracing. So obviously, he was conscious then of his whole progress through the whole thing. If he wasn't conscious, then why was he waiting for this particular soul? And he knew. He was conscious of his everything. And that's why he's the absolute truth. The last word in the absolute truth is Krishna. Krishna. Not Mahavishnu, not Balaram, not some other form, but Krishna. The absolute truth, Krishna, is Abhigya. He knows everything. But by his own will, he cannot know. So when you're dealing with Krishna, it's always yes and no. Like the silly question that people ask all the time. Can God make something so heavy that he can't lift it? Yes and no. Because the very next moment he will lift it. So when you're dealing with Krishna, the answer is always yes and no. Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai.
Allez.